Welcome to the Success School Podcast. We're on episode 114. And today we have a Q&A episode. So we're going to be covering a bunch of topics, lots of AI, lots of startup advice, lots of branding. Seems like the theme lately. I'll kick off with my personal update. So I felt like I've been in a new relationship lately.
Excuse me?
I haven't brought this to Steph. But this new relationship is with a gym. So we've joined a new gym. And so those are foreign. I haven't joined a new gym in 16 months. So walking in, you're a little bit nervous, a little bit shy, walking a little bit more upright, you know, trying to put your best foot forward, do your hair a little bit nicer. It's been like getting in a new relationship for the first time. You kind of don't know the edges. You don't know the boundaries. You don't know what it is, but it's been great. I've loved it. And mainly because the equipment's better. There's bigger dudes, less chicks, which is kind of like counterintuitive because you'd think you'd want more chicks, but there's actually less women, which is great because there's just more jacked dudes around. So it kind of just like raised me up a little bit in terms of like what I want to get from a gym. I want to like send it and be around other gorillas. So it's been incredible. We've joined another gym. It's called World Gym. But yeah, it's been amazing. How have you found the gym, changing it up? Like,
and, I've loved the gym. I think it's awesome. It's way better. And we've improved the Revo and Revo's for kids. So, well, no judgment if you're a Revo.
Revo sucks for people.
The Revo we were at was full of kids. It was like teenagers just fucking around, sitting around on machines and talking to each other between vapes. Like, basically, it's how it felt. So it feels really nice to be in the new one. My favorite part of Tim going to the new gym is he like went in, signed up, got really excited, and then went and bought like 10 new gym outfits because he has like wanted to look good for all his new gorilla boyfriends.
Yeah, I don't know their names. I just know what they look like, you know.
So good. So good. I want to say something funny. Well, mine are so deep.
Yeah. Be deep.
I've been spending a lot of time recently with friends. A lot more than usual.
Yeah. So it's actually 100% more. Yeah, just one.
One. I realized recently that I am hyper independent, except with you. With you, I'm the opposite of hyper independent. I'm like, please, I depend on you completely.
Do everything for me.
But outside of with Tim, I'm hyper independent. So I built that up over years. I'm not sure what kind of trauma response that is in response to, but I'm sure there is something there that it exists because of. And what that's meant is that I haven't really nurtured friendships as much as I probably could have or should have. And losing my dad recently kind of made me realize that I didn't really have as many people to call that probably I would have felt comfortable calling. I probably hadn't built enough deep relationships with people. I probably had like three or four people I felt comfortable calling to talk to when I felt lonely or when I felt sad or, you know, when I wanted to talk about something with somebody. And I realized that I have a lot of people in my world that I really want to spend a lot more time with and get a lot closer to, because in the end, this is really deep, in the end, all you have is the people that are around you. And in the end, they're the people who know you best and who are going to stand with you on your darkest days. And I think that sometimes in entrepreneurship, and I hear Hormozy talk about it all the time, it's like, oh, yeah, just ditch friends if they're not like leveling up with you. And I just kind of think it's a bit bullshit. Like, yeah. I think it's crap. I think that you have a lot of friendships that have taken 27 years before you guys have built businesses at the same time. You know, I think that you don't have to always be leveling up together in order to be friends. I think you don't always have to have everything in common. And I've kind of realized recently that entrepreneurship can make you feel very lonely, but that loneliness is actually a choice, and that there are people around you right now who would love to reach out, who would love to have coffee, who would love to talk about life.
Yep.
And we're probably not, I definitely have not been leveraging that enough. And like the story that I told myself for a long time was that I was like too busy to catch up with people. And I just don't think that's a helpful, I don't think that's a helpful frame for business and life. So
extremely deep.
I've been making some changes and catching up with friends, and it actually has been so good. It's so nice to like switch off for the day. Like I do my work and then I go hang out with my friends or we go out for dinner, and I don't know, it's really wholesome. And I know it sounds really obvious, and for those of you who are listening that have really good friendships and nurture them really well, like I love that for you, but I know that there's going to be a ton of people listening who are like, I haven't caught up with my friends in ages and I really should be.
Yeah.
And that's for you guys.
You did touch on Hormozy. He did a great launch, and he's probably not someone I would take life advice from.
No.
It's probably not someone I would take any advice from that's not business, to be honest. So if Hormozy says, ditch your friends, I probably wouldn't take that with like don't take it as gospel.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's way more successful than me, way jacked, way handsomer, you know, his wife's not as hot. But, you know, like just because someone says something online doesn't mean you should take it as gospel is kind of what I'm saying here.
Correct.
Like, almost he's like, you know, can be a bit of a crab with this other stuff, you know?
Yes.
Like
it's not... Incredible business owner.
Yeah.
I say what you want, genius. But yeah, definitely. I think that it's wild to, that people are just taking like these random quote posts and they're like applying it to their lives.
Yeah. Like ditch all my fucking mates, you know?
And myself included, though. Yeah. I mean, my hyper independence started from way younger than Hormozy, but I would say that those things probably all layered on over time to like you are the sum of the five people you hang out with. And there is a lot of relevance that if you have a piece of shit that's holding you back in your life, then you should probably get rid of that person. But if you have good people in your life that are on different trajectories, I don't think you should get rid of those people. I think that's crap advice.
So we've got a Q&A episode today. We've got a bunch of sick questions. I'm reading the first one. I'm like, man, I could talk about that for an hour, like just that one fucking question. But we've got, I think, eight questions today. So the Q&A has been a really good opportunity for you guys to ask Steph and I questions on our social medias. We kind of put this on our story every now and then, and we feature these in our podcast episodes. So if you guys want to get featured on the Q&A episodes, keep an eye on our stories and ask us questions. So first one is from Mick Haler. Hey, Mick, thanks for asking this question. This is the best. Spilling business decisions you made that you now would have done differently or have changed. I'll go first. So a big realization, you know, we've coached 600 people in the last 2 years. Steph's coached like over 1,200 businesses. But like when I say this, this is going to sound so fucking obvious for everyone listening to this, but your offer has to match your audience. Okay. And I say that right now, you're like, oh, fucking duh. Like, of course your offer has to match your audience. No, but seriously. And I'm going to work an example for you. So I used to have a group training gym, Helix Gym, before. I sold it last year to my friend Sharon. And we used to charge $100 a week for group training. And this was like, that is a crazy amount of money for group training. And I used to do it. And I would fucking strong arm people in a sales conversation to get them to pay $100 a week. And I would do it. And we crushed. We wanted to make 96K. But people were pushed to their financial limit because I charged $100 a week. It was not the right fit for the audience we had or where it was. I could have had such a simple life if I just charged what the market would pay for group training. I wouldn't have to have all these crazy sales. I had a fucking sales team to sell a gym membership. Like, how crazy is that? Like, just think about that. And then, like, the other example is we've had clients or just people we know, and they're like, they just try to overcharge for the thing that they have, for where they're at in the audience they have. They're like, hey, I'm a business coach, and I charge fucking $29,000 for this thing. I have not had a single person ever sign up to it, and I have no proof. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, Steph and I are just like, this is just not going to work. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way this is going to work. But thanks for asking the question. I was able to unload there quite a bit, but really, guys, if you want to be successful, you have to match the offer you've got with the demographic or audience you're trying to sell to. And if it doesn't work out to be this crazy business where you make millions of dollars, it's just not the vehicle for it. It's just not the business for it, okay? Mm. And that's okay. Yeah. You don't have to turn every business you make into a billion-dollar company, guys.
Which is the point of, like, I just loved the gym story, by the way.
Yeah.
That was, I was partially traumatized, re-traumatized again for experience. But, if you're an entrepreneur and you're listening to this podcast, which is everybody, I hope. If you're not, amazing. Very excited for you. You're going to have more than one business, I hate to tell you. You're going to have, you know, no one except for Jeff Bezos built his first company was multi-million, like it's Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
No one does that except Jeff Bezos. Like he's the only person. Literally every single entrepreneur ever has had between 3 to 50 businesses. Some of them have had 10 businesses before they even cracked it, you know. So you're naive to think that the business you're running right now is the only business you're ever going to run.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you run a business like you did with the gym that, you know, you were like, this is going to be it. We're going to make multiple millions of dollars. It's going to be millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then one day, you know, I started a coaching business and we made millions of dollars like that.
Yeah.
And you couldn't understand why. You know, you're a good entrepreneur. You're smart. You apply all the things. You have, you know, coaches. Da, 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 da.
Keep going.
Because it was just the wrong vehicle.
Yeah.
It's not the vehicle you own if you want to make millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I think that that's okay. And I think a lot of people just don't realize that you will have more businesses in your lifetime than just the one you're currently running.
For sure. Any that are coming up for you, like business decisions you would do differently, like now with all your hindsight and perspective? Fucking spill the tea, man. Let's go.
I think that for me personally, and this might only apply to a coaching business scenario, so I'm not sure if this is applicable across all business, but this definitely was true for me. When I first had my first coaching program, which was called the Purpose and Profit Mastermind, I got a lot of demand really quickly. I think, you know, we launched with our first 30 clients, which was incredible. And then those 30 clients loved it and got really fast results. And so our waitlist and demand grew very quickly. And the problem with that was that it was just me. Like, I was doing all the sales calls, all the coaching calls, all the group coaching calls, all the one-to-ones, creating all the content, doing all the workshops. Like, it was all me and a VA. And it was too much, obviously. And so I hired a salesperson in, Chloe, and she was with me for 5 years, and she was awesome and helped out with the sales, and that was gravy. But the demand continued to grow. So now we had someone selling. So the demand was growing even more. So we had that we grew even faster because more people could get access because my calendar wasn't limited. And so all of a sudden I found myself at like 110 clients. I think actually it was probably around 75 clients when I hit a wall personally where I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, I actually can't deliver anymore at this level. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to hire a coach. I was so responsive to the demand and scarce probably that I was going to lose it all, or that they were going to go somewhere else, or that, you know, I couldn't possibly take a step back to put something solid in place. So I'm just going to bring in these people who aren't probably good enough, but I need bodies on the floor. And so I'm just going to trust that I can train them and figure that out. But I don't, I knew, I was pretty certain pretty early on that some of them were not where they needed to be to help our clients get results. But I really felt like I didn't have a choice because of the demand. The decision I would have made differently with what I know now is that I would have scaled up my IP first. I should have paused, just created a really hot wait list for our clients, figured out how to teach more of what I was giving in the coaching sessions so that they didn't actually need me, taking a 3-month pause on taking on new clients people, yeah. And scaled up my IP and put it into a course curriculum content that they could have got a result without needing me. I didn't know how to do that, so I just put more bodies. The problem with scaling business up that way was there were so many problems. Yeah. You know, we had untrained people doing stuff that was okay but not great, which meant that client retention wasn't as good. And also we had more bodies on the floor, so there was more revenue but less profit. And it ended up just being something that we ended up shutting down. So
it's crazy. We've always had, like, crazy demand on these type of things, and we've always done that. Like, even when we built Successful 1.0, like, we're on 5.0 at the moment. Like, it was fucked shit, like, compared to what it is now. It's like, any lesson, if you guys have any type of coaching program, make sure the curriculum is epic, like, at the start. Like, make sure it is bulletproof. People are getting results. I can't even tell you how many headaches that's going to save you.
Yeah.
And, like, just...
Everyone rushes to the finish line. Everyone just, like, wants to get the clients in the program.
Minimum viable
like,
product.
If you just really perfect, and one of our friends, Jacob, is really good at this. He, like, really perfects his content before he puts people through it.
Yeah.
I think now, like, every time we bring something to our clients, you know, we just recently brought out a set of modules around personal brand. And we like, really went deep, making sure we covered off all the angles. Like, we're kind of purists when it comes now to sharing IP to make sure that our clients can watch it, absorb it, get it, and get the result without needing us at all.
So next question from Caleb_R. Is it better to build a personal brand or a business brand first? Which would you do?
I would build a personal brand first now.
Cool.
110%, 100%.
Yeah. Why?
It's so easy because just talk about what you're doing. You talk about who you are. Like, I wish I started a YouTube forever ago.
Yeah.
I wish that I just, like, had, you know, DJI and I was just walking around and I was just talking about my thoughts and what I'm up to.
It was a GoPro back in the day.
It was a GoPro. One of my favorite, like, not favorite, but, like, at night sometimes if we're watching YouTube and Tim's fallen asleep, I'll sometimes this, like, random guy that comes up. I don't know his name. I don't even know his handle. But, like, he lives in Bali and he just walks around and tells you stories about his life from Bali.
Mm.
He's, like, not a good presenter. He's not a particularly handsome guy. His videos are not edited to high quality, but I'm completely obsessed. Like, it's so interesting to just to hear this guy who's from this completely different background just talk about his life. And I think you don't even have to be like Sam Sulek is another really good example of somebody who's, like, not interesting, not particularly handsome, has no special characters, that has massed millions and millions of views and could probably sell anything he wanted right now and monetize his audience just from being himself.
But he's jacked.
He is jacked and he does work out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So Caleb, to answer your question, I think a personal brand is the easiest thing you can build because it's just you in everyday life. The next question is from Blake DeVos. Hey Blake, nervous system strategy in prep for a season of false hope late goals, and VAR decisions. Do you know what VAR decisions are?
Yeah, luckily I Googled this before, and I actually put in AI, and they were like, I think he's using soccer terminology. So VAR means like an offside decision or a bad decision or something like that. So I'm going to just interpret this as like, how do you basically get your shit together or your nervous system for like a season of life where things might not be going well, or goals might not happen as fast as you want, or you might make some bad decisions. And, you know, the answer to this, Blake, is you need to get not just your nervous system ready, but your body, your mind, your health, your fitness, your training, your nutrition, your sleep, your all these things have to be optimal, especially if you know that shit's going to hit the fan in your life and you're going to handle this emotionally. So one of the best things I have ever done is invested in myself. And I was a fucking most generic thing you could ever say, but invested in myself from like a mindset perspective. So I did like the undergrad, and then they call it a master's in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, essentially like a psychology type course that you can do. And I've had, you know, 5 or 6 different mindset coaches over the last 10 years, and I've really like studied the art of mindset, and I've really like understood myself from a conscious level of like all my fears, frustrations, anger, pain points, all that type of stuff. Like I know myself pretty deeply, and that really helps me regulate myself, because if I'm feeling a certain way emotionally or mentally, I can be like, all right, Tim, so why are you thinking that? Why are you being a bitch? Like, what's actually going on? Like, why is that triggering you? And if you don't have that understanding, or you can't deep dive that on yourself, it'll just come out in like emotional outbursts, or you'll just be pissed off, or you'll just be angry. So like for any business owner, I think you have to have a really good understanding of your own mindset and your own body and your own psychology. But from like a practical, you know, terminology here is like eat well, get 8 hours of sleep, take your supplements, go for walks, you know, kiss your wife, tell her you love her, like do all the stuff that makes you feel whole as a human if you know it's going to be a hard season of life. And the only other thing I'm going to say here is like, hard seasons in life, they never last. But without hard seasons, there will be no good seasons. And you would have no conscious understanding of what good and bad is if you've never experienced bad. Because, you know, life is just one big game of polarity. It's like good equals bad, light equals darkness, and so forth. So you have to really go through this if you want to experience the joys in life.
Mm, beautiful.
Damn. Deep.
Damn. I was going to be like, yeah, box breathing. Amazing.
All right. Next question from Chantel Louise. Piece of advice for someone building a startup? That is the most general question of all time. Mm. Steph, what is one piece of advice for someone building a startup?
Any.
Yeah, fucking anything.
I would say just be prepared to fail. Yeah. And I just don't think anybody drilled that into me enough. Like, you will hear it, but it will not become true for you. Like, I just was so scared of doing it wrong. Like, yeah. And I think this is really normal when you're building a startup, especially if you've come from the corporate world, or, you know, you've had a job, or you've come from the university system, or you've come from the school system, or you've basically been raised in a Western country. It's incredibly hard to make the transition from, like, what you're supposed to do, which is go to university, get a good job, go to work, and
be a
person in the community, right? To being an entrepreneur, which is like basically breaking all of those rules, okay? And so when you are first starting out in entrepreneurship, in the school system, in the workplace, in the workforce, failure is not good. Making mistakes is very bad. Doing the wrong thing will get you fired. You could lose everything by making a bad decision. In the entrepreneur world, failure is the gift. Failure is the key. Like, you have to try and make a mistake and learn from it, and try and make a mistake and learn from it, and try and make a mistake and learn. That's literally the only way to learn. And so you are probably 25 fails, whether that's a failed post, a failed piece of content, a failed pitch, a failed email marketing sequence, a failed launch. You're probably 25 fails away from cracking something gold. So my advice is just like fail as fast as you can. Like, just put as much out there and let it suck as quickly as possible so that this season of failure is over. But honestly, for anyone listening that's maybe out of the side of the startup phase, the season of failure never ends. Like, it just, they become further away. You just make less mistakes because you have more skills. But eventually, you still fail.
My only other thing to add to that would be just to document the journey. If you document the journey, whether that's weekly, posting on social media, daily, posting on your Facebook, just updating your friends and family, like email 3 people about it, just document the journey so you can reflect on it and be like, hey, I did this. I went through this. Hey, I'm struggling with this. Hey, can anyone help me with this? You're going to go so much further. Like, building in silence is is shit. Yeah. So, like, I would love to see a friend of mine start a business and start the entrepreneurial journey and just, like, tell us what's up. Like, hey, I'm launching this product. Let me know what you guys think of it. Like, hey, I've got this. Like, how cool would that be? So I would love to help them.
Same.
I would help them for free.
Totally.
Don't fuck. Like, you're not joining. You're not joining Successful for free. $2.97. Go on our website. Join.
I would say on that as well, some of my favorite like content creators are the ones that are like, told my mum that I was going to be a content creator, make millions of dollars. It's day 14, currently at 200 followers. Like, and it's funny and it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. And eventually they go viral. And that doesn't necessarily mean they can monetize anything, but like, I love the build with me content. I think it's so interesting. I think it's so humbling.
Yeah.
I think it's so good. It's so courageous and it's really fun to watch. And so I think that as a trend of content at the moment, the build with me content is really hot. Guys, if you're not sharing build with me, like, hey, I made this last week and I made this mistake, or hey, the team put out this email last week and it sent out to everyone saying, hey, Carly, like if you're not sharing that stuff, like that sounds interesting, funny and relatable.
Yeah.
I think that it's the easiest way to build an online presence right now. Okay. We have a question from Support Worker Store. Love it. Great handle, because I know exactly what you do, just by the way.
So, do you? What do they do?
I'm assuming that they support
workers.
They have support worker like stuff.
Okay.
That would help support workers.
Well, support worker store. Like, what's a support worker stuff?
Well, like disabled, like people who work in the disability center,
okay,
sector are called like support workers. So okay. I imagine they like help those people.
Yeah.
With something. Anyway, we'll look into what you do after. Can I be nosy as fuck? How many leads do you actually get from YouTube? Ooh, love it.
Great question. I actually don't know. And I will tell you why right now. So we're doing this whole thing. We do a weekly YouTube, how to whatever, get X result. And if they want to get the download, they go to the link in the description, enter their details, and then we would get them as a lead. I actually don't have the statistics on that. It's one thing I'm not tracking. But we just got a software called Hyros that is going to do this for us. So we've just connected it to basically ads, email, organic, YouTube, Google Ads, and it's going to track the attribution of where all of our leads come from, how much money they spend, what the lifetime value is. Essentially, this crazy tracking tool that's going to track all of this. It's very hard to know because our platforms are also super cross-pollinated. So people come from Instagram, go to YouTube, they go to our podcast, they, you know, jump on our email list, and then someone starts on our email list and ends up on our social media and their DMs. So it's really hard to know, like, first contact. And if I were just to like throw a number out there of like how many leads do I think we actually get every month from YouTube, I'd say like 100, name, email, phone numbers. And then in terms of people applying to work with us, we funnel everyone into a workshop, so a monthly conversion event, and that's how we sign them up. So I'm not sure. I'd have to check like who we actually sign up, where their first contact is with us. But I'd say we get about 100 leads a month, name, email, number from YouTube. These people are super high level, bought in, they're searching things that we help with. Therefore, they're like a great lead for us, not just someone that follows us on social media and likes our vibe.
Cool.
All right. Next question is from Jackson_M. Is there any part of marketing that AI can't replace?
I am going to try and answer this. I'm not the fastest cab off the ranks when it comes to AI. I'm definitely not as finger on pulse with it. Right now, from what I can understand, AI is good. It's not great enough to completely take over everything about you. I think that when you're talking about marketing, it really depends on, you know, what specific channels you're talking about. But like right now, AI can't create storytelling content for you about your childhood and put it all together because it doesn't know. So unless you're speaking it into AI and then asking AI to pull it together and then you're feeding it the photos, it's going to be really hard for AI to create that content. It could probably create made up content about that, but it's not going to be a true life story of yours. So when it the reason that we've been pushing the personal brand stuff so much on our social media and to our clients is because it is the one thing that right now AI literally couldn't replace. I mean, you could tell it to go make up stories for you, but obviously that would be so disingenuous and so crap. So the personal brand stuff, the reason that everyone's moving towards personal brand is because AI can't replace it. AI can't make it. It is true, real human vulnerability-based content. And because of that, people are flocking to it. And it's a subconscious thing. Like the market is flocking subconsciously to this type of personal brand content because they're craving realness, because there's so much unsteadiness in the market right now around whether AI is going to replace our jobs, our businesses, our stuff, that more and more naturally as human beings, we're leaning towards human connection. We're wanting to be in actual rooms with people. We're wanting to go to events and retreats, and we're wanting to see humans really interact online. And so, Jackson, if you're wanting to safeguard your businesses right now in terms of marketing, personal brand would be my answer. Last question from Drew_Martin. Can you really have a strong brand if you're not polarizing? Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you can. And I think you could go down the personal brand route and share your values, what you're up to on a day-to-day basis, and have a really good brand. People will like you. There's a weird corner of the internet for every single weirdo out there. So if you think you're too weird for the internet, like there's a corner of weirdos just like you that are out there and they want to, you know, like and trust and be in connection with you. I think you can have faster virality by being polarizing. So if you really wanted to go viral, you could be super polarizing. So there's a guy that I follow on Instagram. His name's Connor Weston. He's gone from 0 to 100,000 followers by smoking cigarettes and doing crazy stuff on his social media. Mm. And he just does, he talks about sales and smoking cigarettes basically and, you know, dating girls, and he's just a lad. And he's done that because it is polarizing. Like, he's jacked. He's a High Rocks competitor. He smokes.
He smokes during his High Rocks workouts and he smokes during his surfs, and he's like, yeah, I'm an athlete, and he's just like puffing ciggies the whole time. It's kind of humorous, and everyone's like, those two things don't make sense together.
Yeah.
Therefore, they follow him.
If we zoom out a little bit and we look at this from like the public's acceptance of being polarizing, it's a lot more acceptable now to be polarizing than it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, if you're polarizing, you were getting fucking canceled. Mm. Now, you can say whatever the fuck you want and you're not getting canceled. No one's getting canceled. But even, you know, 4 years ago, it was even worse. So the right time to be polarizing is now. And if you think it's a bit like, I don't know if I should post this, I think you should. Mm. Steph and I always do this. We're like, hey, like, read my content. Like, do you think this is too hectic or too much? And it's always like, no, that's, you know, fuck all.
I think what you need to be prepared for if you're asking this question is, like, one, if you don't want to be polarizing, there's heaps of nice guys that are winning on the internet, just to be really clear. So you don't have to be a mean guy or polarizing or aggressive to win on the internet. There are tons, and you just need to go find them in your algorithm. There are tons of nice guys who are winning online. Like, absolutely does not need to be polarizing. But two, if you're interested in being polarizing, I think you just need to be really comfortable with the fact, like, I put up a reel today. I was worried about it going up. I prepared my nervous system, and Blake, this is to answer your question, I prepared my nervous system by telling myself that it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, and all that matters is the opinions of the people in my household, and that's you, me, and the dogs. And so I think that it's preparing yourself for the internet's going to say shit, and you have to prepare yourself for the fact that, like, at some point your stuff's going to hit some sort of algorithm, and people are, you could say bland shit. You could say, we've said very, very non-aggressive, very bland marketing advice that's gone viral because it's hit an algorithm because of our teeth or my body shape or something like that. And then we've got heinous comments. So I think if you're in the online world, you can't avoid it. It's not about whether you're being polarizing or not. Your content will grow when it hits an algorithm regardless.
All right, guys, that was our Q&A episode. If you got some value from that, send us a message and hit the subscribe button, whatever platform you're at. These are a little bit of a different style of episode, so please keep us looped in on, you know, your thoughts and how you guys are finding these. I think they're super fun, and it's been really amazing to look into my wife's eyes in this new format every single day.
So handsome. Guys, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next week.
Chat soon.